Welcome to Reality TV, your source for snarky reality TV recaps. I'm Jody, the friend who tells you it's okay to say all the horrible things you're thinking, but you're too afraid to say out loud. Or I'm just the friend who says it so you don't have to. Now this week we had the season premiere of 90 Day Fiancé and holy shit, it did not disappoint. I have 16 pages of notes right here in front of me. It actually took me 4 hours to watch because I had to stop so many times to write everything down. You can hear I'm already excited about it. Get comfortable. I can promise you we're going to be here a while. We also had a new episode of TLC's Unexpected and fingers crossed, the last of the bottom of the barrel for Married at First Sight. Coming up this week on Patreon, I'm going to be talking all about Netflix Making a Murderer Part 2. Like many of you, I have been obsessed with this docuseries since 2016, and I absolutely do have a side on this one. So if you are just as obsessed as I am, head on over to patreon.com/realitypod. Your support of Reality TV means so much to me. Reality TV is my baby, and that's why I try to give you 150% on Patreon to bring you real quality content and loads of perks. If $1 or $5 a month is too much to be spending on Patreon, I understand that. So please, at the very least, talk to me on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, at Reality TV Pod. And if you are not into that sort of thing, leave a 5-star review on iTunes. Really, truly helps me out. And now, without further ado, let the circus begin. Our first couple that we meet is Ashley and Jay. Ashley's 31 from Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania, which sounds like a made-up town, but fun fact, Mr. Reality TV has been there a time or two. She is a bartender, and Ashley is a mother of two large boobs. Oh, I'm sorry, I mean two small children. And in her spare time, she takes self-defense in what looks to be a Catholic school gymnasium from who I think is Kip, who evidently graduated from Rex Kwando. Now let's get to know Ashley a little bit more in terms of her relationship history. Well, all of her exes have cheated on her. Seems like she didn't really care to learn a damn thing or two, so when she flew down to Jamaica for a destination wedding, she met this kid named Jay at a bar. Now I'm saying kid because although Ashley is 31, Jay is only 20. Now think about that. He is 20 years old now. So let's just think about how a timeline works and go back in time, a little to the left, which means this kid was likely, what, 18 or 19 when they met? Ew. Anyone else getting a middle school teacher getting a crush on one of her students? Yeah, I am. I can already see her face on some sort of Dr. Phil episode. But let's give her a break because she didn't Letourneau it up just yet. She waited until she got back home and hopped on the social media, and that's when the sparks start to fly. Jay also sent her many a video, one of them featuring Tariq's mesh tank top, and before Ashley could, remember what the hell that lump of tissue in her head was for, she flies down to spend over a week with this guy. And then 8 days later, he proposes in what looks to be Jamaica's Chippendale stage. Now, at this point, I am putting my bets on Jay being an aspiring stripper because he was never not slithering on the ground or doing backflips like, what's his face from last season? The acrobat, Patrick. Remember, he was trying to parkour his way into French Miriam's heart and or vagina. I mean, same. Now, before Ashley can marry Jay and bring him here, Jay has to pass one more interview in Jamaica. So she's going to fly down so she can attend this meeting with him. We get to meet Ashley's friend, Natalie, who has met and spent time with Jay in Jamaica, and she has some major concerns. Now, if Ashley were my friend, I would have started out with, my concerns about the Hep C he's likely picking up every time he snakes his way into a vertical position. But no, Natalie goes for the cheating thing. Yes, we have a cheating scandal right within the first 10 minutes of the season and right there in the middle of an IKEA cafeteria. you know I know an Ingolf stool when I see a few dozen. Now, Natalie overheard Jay say he was sleeping with two other women besides Ashley. But you guys, Ashley's the cool girlfriend. She doesn't need a clean STD test or a faithful partner. No, it's none of her business. She's cool, you guys. Even if Jesus Christ himself came down to Mechanicsburg, Pennsylvania on a Tuesday and chose to send a message to his followers on Earth, and he chose Ashley, you know, Seventh-day Adventist be damned, he is here to send a message about Jay. He's a cheater, and you shouldn't be with him, but you know what? Fuck that, Jesus. It's none of my business. I'm the cool girl. What happens in Jamaica stays in Jamaica. Yeah, unless it's Hep B, herpes, or HPV. There's no cure for that shit. Now let's jump over to Jamaica Mon. We meet Jay, who has the same confidence as, hold on to yourself here, Papa Paxil, something to calm down. He has the same confidence and aura as River. I know, let it settle in there. So automatically, Jay's face just attracts all of our virtual fists straight to the mandible. Now, he is also a tattoo artist who is so high on delusion and self-grandeur that he brags about conning American woman in his past. And get this, not just any woman, his father's woman. And oh, the laughs. Isn't that hilarious? Now, don't think I didn't catch the I lost my virginity at 8 years old thing, because I did. And there's nothing I can say about it besides I am completely disgusted. That's a sad thing. It's not brag-worthy. It needs to be looked into by law enforcement personnel. But that, you know, sad story aside, let's learn more about Jay. His mom lives and works in the United States. He has a sister named Poochie who says she's 8 months pregnant. But if she is 8 months along, you guys, I am like a solid 17 months past my due date, okay? Now, Jay is also, you know, a lying piece of crap, and he absolutely, definitely cheated. Doo-bop, doo-wop, doo-wow. Okay, in case you didn't catch it, please go back and see how they introduced Colt, because for some reason, he's got like this little like shimmy, shimmy, scat, scat, doo-wop intro music. Not sure what that has to do with. And oh my God, if we find out that he's some sort of a blues singer or plays the saxophone, I'm going to lose my goddamn mind, because I can already tell you Colt is all over my radar this season. Okay, deep breath. Let's get into it. Let's get into a Las Vegas frame of mind, because here's Colt in his bedroom dressing up his kitty cats named Baby Girl, Cookie Dough, and Sugar. He smells them. He lets them play around his Forever brand shoes. And I'm going to tell you right now, I'm ashamed to tell you how long I searched up, down, inside out, the entire World Wide Web, trying to find information on this brand of shoes, only to come up shoeless and empty-handed. But anyway, Colt is employed, which is a start, okay? It's a lot more than we can say for many people on this show. So good for him. He's got a paycheck coming in. Now, he also lives with his mom, Debbie, because of course he does. And of course, her name is Debbie. I mean, have you ever seen a more Debbie than Debbie? They have a very tight relationship, very mother Paul and Paul. Colt's mom even drives him to work and picks him up because they share a car. Yay! Great! Debbie also makes a mean home-style scramble every morning and even has a nice little plastic lids like hospital room service provides. So cozy. Debbie even makes his bed and clears his plates and washes his clothes. Okay, now the only positive thing I can see about this whole living situation between Colt and Mother Colt is that it appears the house is clean. I didn't see any signs of, you know, black mold growing at the walls or bacteria growth on the stove knobs. So yay for that. I can't give glowing reviews for the rest of the household, however. If Colt handles his women like he handles the things he likes to tinker around with or his video game controllers, well, I think Larissa, his soon-to-be wife, is going to be jealous of the cats. Now enter Larissa. Larissa is stunning, and I mean absolutely gorgeous woman from Brazil. She even took my breath away. They met online, obviously, and Colt flew to meet her in Cancun, where they spent 5 days together before he proposed to her before he left. So fast forward several months, and here we are. They have the visa approved, and the flight for Larissa to arrive in the States is already booked. But there is a major glitch in the plans. Larissa's visa hasn't arrived. She doesn't have them in her hands yet, so obviously she can't take the flight to meet up with Colt. Here is where we get the first real-time glimpse of Larissa, and wow, did she make an entrance. Let's just say her beauty stopped at the surface for me. This bitch just launches into Colt in a very wannabe Kardashian, kind of reminiscent of first season on Fisa when she came in just really hot. Now, the reason Larissa comes in just full force is because she wants a new plane ticket. It took me a few minutes to figure out what the hell was going on, but basically, Larissa wanted Colt to pay to change her flight to just a few hours later. But Colt is concerned that she still may not get the visa in time, so he's like, okay, I'm just going to pay the change fee once, err on the side of caution, and change the flight to a few days later. This does not make Larissa happy, so she disses Colt's man bangs and sticks her boobs out, and Colt, I don't think he really caught on to it because he starts throwing these darlin', doesn't matter, darlin'. Like I said, I don't think Colt really caught on that Larissa was being a total stuck-up bitch to him. I think he also lacks people skills, and so he just couldn't even be bothered with the guilt trip that she was trying to throw on him. Now jump to Colt going to his cousin's house, where he embraced his male cousin like he wanted to be burped and changed and swaddled for bed. He put both his arms under his cousin's arms and just like lingered in that hug for at least 3 seconds too long. And then he sauntered his womanly hips and sicy moves outside, where he treated himself to some room temperature bottle of water. Decadence. Now, his cousin's wife really did it up in the backyard with the chalk hearts and the love hints all around. I got a very we homeschool our carb allergic children, free love, flower child vibe. So I was not expecting the she might be into him because he's got a good heart, because God knows it's not his looks. Jesus Christ, have you seen him? Then the 12-inch penis line, which, nope, he doesn't. I can promise you it's a fact. It's not happening. But confession time. I really thought the cousin was super cute. Okay, he was a bit harsh. He was funny, but I dig a beard and you know I like a little larger gentleman than myself, so I can feel thin. So I was digging everything coming out of the cousin's mouth. But there's no talking any sense into Colt because he is just love struck? Question mark. I'll put a question mark there. He doesn't know what love is, right? Okay, now here it is, the point in the show where I suddenly came to, otherwise known as daylight in Brazil. Remember a few minutes ago when I was saying, oh my gosh, Larissa took my breath away. She was stunning. Yeah. You also remember that episode of Seinfeld where Jerry's date kept looking different depending on the lighting? Yeah. Well, here we are, a rude woman with a nasty attitude, huge entitlement issues, some huge balls to say what she did to Colt, and some massive teeth to match. I felt so badly for Colt because as much as I talk shit and make fun of these people, well, first of all, I'm not engaged to them. But second of all, I talk behind people's backs because my mother raised me right. I'm not some rude bitch like Larissa who's just so cruel to people's faces. Like I said, that is reserved exclusively for, you know, podcasts that anyone can listen to. But like Colt, if I get my feelings hurt, I just shove a pastry in my mouth and let carb-filled fuzzy feelings fill me with happiness and feelings of guilt, and then, you know, empty calories that I'm never going to burn off, but, you know, it feels good in the moment. We're in the swing of a new school year, which means the whole family is busy with work, kids' practices, tutoring, and trying to stay healthy. Care of makes taking care of yourself so easy with personalized vitamins and supplement packets. Each daily packet has personalized notes or quotes on them, which makes it really fun to see what you're going to get that day. It's like a healthy fortune cookie. By answering personalized questions, Care of matches your unique needs and preferences and matches you with the exact support your body needs for an extra health boost. My kids love seeing what my vitamin fortune is going to be every morning, and I love knowing I'm getting my omega-3s and even some traditional Eastern medicine I've been wanting to try. When I took the Care of quiz, I said I needed more energy for my workouts, and I definitely need some work in my quality of sleep. And whether we like it or not, winter is coming, so our immune systems need a little extra lovin' and some vitamin D. Whether you need prenatal support or just a well-matched vitamin program that's backed up by honest research, Care of has you covered. And my favorite thing about Care of, a portion of every sale goes to the Good Plus Foundation, which provides expectant mothers who are in need with quality prenatal vitamins. Go to takecareof.com, take the quiz to see what you need to stay salty, and enter code REALITYV for 25% off your first month. That's takecareof.com, use code REALITYV. Now, man, we're going to go from someone I feel really badly for being cold to someone I can already tell I'm going to hate with a passion. That would be Jonathan, who's 32, from North Carolina, and his fiance, Fernanda. John is a real estate agent who likes to work out, work hard, and play hard, because he's John, the typical 30-something douchebag that wears a red Kabbalah string around his wrist because he thinks it makes him look like he's got feelings and thoughts and he's able to meditate if he really tries. John is also the kind of guy who I love to endlessly rip on because he is such a freaking tool. He is the guy who still thinks he's cool because he played baseball in college 10 fucking years ago. He's also the guy who has curtains hanging in his house, so he thinks he's very established. And he thinks he has life balance because not only does he work, but he makes time for his bros. We all know this guy, and we hate this guy. He's the guy who would have loved to make the cast of The Real World or Road Rules, and even though he was too old for it at the time, he's still trying out for it, you know, still sending in his little sizzle reels to MTV's The Challenge 49 or whatever the shit. Okay, I need to take a deep breath because this is going to be the guy who I'm going to have to take my effects or like right before the episode starts because he's going to make me turn into anger from inside out. Okay, now I hate him because of everything I said, but also because, you know, he's engaged to a 19-year-old. Meet Fernanda. You want to know the very first thing that John said, the words used to describe his lovely fiance? Quote, there isn't one thing on her body I don't like. Okay. Anything else? You know, like kindness, humor, she's got a big heart. Oh, no? Oh, okay then. Well, I guess tell us some more. Well, she's stubborn. She's not a yes woman. She'll speak her mind. Okay, John. Well, if she were, you know, a grown woman, I'd say I love that quality in her. But since Fernanda just recently became of legal age, I tend to think that's possibly a spoiled teenager who just wants their own way because, you know, they've never had to experience life or bills or loans or rent. In fact, John has been paying for a lot of things, including new boobs for Fernanda. You think he'd be happy about that, those new boobs that he has, but no, they've given him, quote, his biggest fear. I mean, I don't want, like, antennas left and right. He just cracks himself up, doesn't he? Fancies himself a total catch. What a great guy. And no, John, no one thinks that Fernanda is using you. We think that you are using her because she's beautiful and young and naive and impressionable, and you just want her to be your sexy little trophy wife. Let's meet Danny, Jonathan's friend with a really fun southern accent. She's one of his best friends, and she has some concerns. Okay, I won't put my horrible southern accent on you anymore. But John never really wanted to get married, and now all of a sudden he's rushing into marrying this 19-year-old girl. So his friends are wondering what the hell is going on, and does he have any idea that getting with a younger woman or an older girl, I guess you could put it that way, right? Does he know what he's getting into? It's not the ideal situation. Now, I think, and maybe I'm speaking too generally here, but I think maybe only women can appreciate what Danny was trying to say. We have all been there. We can all remember what it's like being 19 years old. The difference of being a 19-year-old girl and a 30-some-year-old or even later 20s, it's a huge difference, right? She may have some resentment jumping from basically high school to middle age or early middle age. You guys get what I'm saying. I'm with Danny here. My hope is that maybe Danny befriends Fernanda because I actually kind of like her. Now, unlike previous scenarios on 90 Day Fiancé, we don't get to actually see John arriving in Mexico to go get Fernanda or to see her saying all of her goodbyes to her family. Instead, we get the blue screen explaining how Fernanda was really sad, but she left it all behind and she is starting her 90-day journey today with John in America. Flash to John in the airport giggling like a fucking asshole because he's about to see the boobs that he purchased. Now, all the while he's having the time of his life giggling about nipples, I'm thinking about how sweet and pretty and natural Fernanda is, and stay with me here, how strongly, I mean, it is a striking comparison, a bearded John resembles present-day Screech. Yeah, he is Dustin Diamond to me, and that's all I can see now. And he definitely blew it like a Screech does too. There is no power at his house, there's no bed, and there's some nasty old 3-year-old underwear from his ex in the drawer that Fernanda finds. I do not blame her for being upset. It was really, really stupid of him completely. But I think her tears and her getting that upset about it was probably just out of exhaustion, right? I mean, you just said goodbye to your entire life, all your family. Tensions are high already, and it was just the last thing she needed to see after a really long week. Speaking of things that are long, let's meet our long brown hair beauty, Kalani. I think she's absolutely stunning. She's 29 years old. She's from California. I think she may be the most beautiful woman on the show. What I would give for long, thick, beautiful, dark hair. I just think she is so naturally gorgeous. But let's get to know her a little bit more. Kalani is a single mom. She has a 5-month-old son named Oliver, who I think has a future voiceover career as a backup signal. Yeah, he's a cute baby. He's got a full-grown man's face, but he's adorable. Okay, he's a cute baby, but maybe I'm just so over the baby stage, but man, did it send chills up my spine. But more about Kalani. She's one of 3 kids. Her mom is white. Her dad is Samoan. And she was raised Mormon. Now, this is no diss at all to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I know that they're not called Mormons anymore because all of my favorite shows highlight the members of your church. And for that, thank you, Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints and TLC, Te Amo, Moana, however you say I love you in Samoan. Now, Kalani's dad really went against the grain of sorts because he was very insistent, persistent, that he wanted his kids to marry white guys. Okay, lots of question marks here. I'm like that meme where the guy's like, huh? And there's question marks all over. Kalani herself said she was usually attracted to older white guys, gingers. She may have said Jewish in there too, but she had me at older gingers because, my God, can you even imagine the gorgeousness of those children? I mean, just try to do the geometry and the face morphing. I really think she could have had some beauty pageant winners here. But anyway, no ginger Samoa crossover babies are going to happen because Kalani is engaged to Asuelu or Asuelo. She was saying it two different ways. Asuelo is Oliver's father. He is Samoan. He knows his way around a coconut. He knows his way around Kalani's nani nani boo boo because she decided to give Asuelo the gift Robin from Sister Wives gave her first boyfriend. And I am not talking about a charm bracelet from my Sister Wives closet. Now, here's the thing so far. We know how quickly the show changes, but I'm going to put this out there. I may change my mind. I may be eating my words later, but I really liked Kalani. She knows her family is disapproving of her life, but you know what? She is doing her damn thing. It's not like she's some teen mom. She's 29. She really doesn't need her family's full approval of everything. Based on what she's telling us, though, her family thinks Asuelu is using her to get to the United States, but Kalani thinks it's more than just that. She thinks that they really have a future together. She even brought Oliver to Samoa, and they decided that when she was there, the family that they would build together would have more opportunities in the States, so Asuelu is going to move here. The problem here is that, remember, Kalani's dad, Lo, not to be confused with Kale from Teen Mom's kid, Father Lo really, really doesn't like his people, meaning Samoan people. And again, this is his words. I am just the messenger. I don't get it either. Perhaps we will learn why he has such a bias towards his own heritage. Not quite sure what's going on there, but like I said, maybe we'll figure out some sort of family history. So we have Father Lo that hates all Samoans, and we have Sister Kalini. Yeah, I know, Kalani and Kalini. Damn, their parents must have mixed their names up all the time. But Sister Kalini now hates Asuelu because he slept with someone else while Kalani was here and they were on a break. There's a very, very confusing situation that I think just comes down to Kalani exaggerating a lot of different scenarios in order to garner attention and probably get help from her family. And she ends up coming clean at this dinner with Kalini and two other friends or cousins or something. And Kalini ended up being totally grossed out that her sister was lying to her, which leads me to believe that Kalani has a habit of exaggerating for attention and getting help. And this is just a theory that I have, but something about this sister relationship and what Kalani did or didn't lie about, there's some subtext going on that I couldn't quite put my finger on. Maybe you got the full picture here. You have some insight. If you do, let me know. Something's going on there. I'm sure we'll figure it out throughout the season. Now let's move on to our last couple that we met. And while John is going to piss me off in a, yeah, you're not that cool bro way, Eric is going to piss me off in a David from David and Annie way. Here we go. Eric is 40, question mark times question mark to the infinity power. He works in avionics, which I'm pretty sure is what Creed from The Office claimed to do, and he's a former Marine. Hoorah! Or something, but yeah, for real, thank you for your service, but also no thank you to trying to convince us that that wasn't the first jog that you've taken since basic training. That 100% cotton, sweat-soaked t-shirt tells us that was the first lie you've given us. Well, Eric is a divorced dad of three daughters with some really weird, wacky names that I haven't heard since Jim and the Holograms was canceled in the 1980s. Showtime synergy. Now, the reason I'm bringing up the kids' names is not to diss the kids, because they're already going to have a rough go at it, if you know what I mean. But someone who names their children really weird things, it's always a tip-off of bad decision-making. And Eric is just full of questions in his life, and he's always making tough decisions. For example, after dating 2 to 3 American women, Eric thought the universe was telling him to give up. He could go to Turkey or Syria to fight ISIS, or Eggs Benedict in A Foreign Bride. Winner, winner, chicken dinner, straight from the diner where Guy Fieri definitely licked a spatula or two. Enter Lita. Her profile came up on a dating site Eric used, and she's from Indonesia. She's actually a former Miss Indonesia and a bit of a face shifter, much like Larissa. She looks like a completely different person in every photo and video. She absolutely could have just snagged some video and sent it to him of a different woman, and he would have fallen for it, and so would I. I mean, she really looks drastically different every time. But Eric does too, I noticed. He looks much better with a good high and tight haircut, but damn, this man needs some vitamin D. Get him some of that Care of vitamin package, because that sallow skin and dark eyes of his, it's screaming a vitamin deficiency. If not vitamin D, something. Iron, I don't know. He needs some sort of relief. Maybe I'll sign him up and send it over to him. And speaking of packages, guess what? Lita is not just a one-person package. She has a son, a 2-year-old son, who's going to be moving to the States with her, because Lita and Eric have already done the whole K-1 visa process. Now here's the hitch, and pun absolutely intended. Lita comes from money. She does this little MTV-style Cribs tour of her house, but meanwhile, Eric is sitting in a filthy upholstered chair with a box fan behind him. A box fan, you guys. I thought that was going to be the saddest thing about Eric, but turns out it's not. Eric's daughter Tasha lives with him in this filthy apartment. She pays half of everything, and he told her she needed to move out to make room for Lita and her son. Now, not only that, you know, having your kid pay half your bills, half the rent, telling him to scram when you find your mail order bride that you ordered, he welcomes her with a, "Hey, brat," when she comes outside on this balcony, closing behind her this dusty, in severe need of a wash screen door. It was, I mean, no wonder everything in the apartment is filthy and disgusting, because as soon as a wind comes through that screen, you might as well just have a dust bowl in front of it and put the box fan by it and just blow the dust around. Like I said, I'm just getting super strong David vibes from Eric. Off the charts, like my childhood physical weight comparisons, 95th percentile on the David percentile ranking of narcissistic fathers. Now, if you were not convinced and you're saying, "Jody, you know what? You're being way too harsh." How about when Eric got together with his ex-wife and his kids because he didn't want them to have any hard feelings, you know, his old family, about his new family? You guys, he actually said, "My old family." What the fuck is that? They're still your kids, you piece of turd. Honestly, I was all heated up just from that word choice alone. So what happened at the table most of the time was just buzzing, just ugh, I could hear the blood flowing through my veins, until we got to the child support issue, which then got me all pissed off again. Eric just needed to stop talking. Your ex-wife does not need to know everything. Much like David, I'm going to be making this comparison all season long. I just know it. Eric's honesty isn't honorable. He thinks it is, right? He thinks he's telling the truth. It's charming. It's an honorable thing to do. But he also thinks it's an excuse to still do what you want to do, because at least you're being honest about it. No, you're still an asshole. Now, this season coming up looks It really looks incredible. I have a feeling that we are going to really feel for Eric's children. Maybe we'll turn on them. I mean, you know, sometimes we like to hate the kids, but I definitely think what's her name, Tasha, is going to be our voice of reason. Now, after a very quick break, let's talk about TLC's Unexpected. A few weeks ago, I told you about Green Chef, a USDA-certified organic company whose meal plans include paleo, vegan, vegetarian, keto, gluten-free, omnivore, and my favorite, carnivore, which all include a wide variety of organic ingredients. Since then, I personally subscribed myself using my own promo code, I ain't too proud, for a sweet discount, and I really, really love it. My kids are still young, so I subscribe for boxes containing 3 meals for 2 people. That is plenty for Dave and I to have our own plate and the kids to have a portion of ours. Now, because Dave travels quite a bit, I go on to Green Chef and choose which weeks I want to skip and which meals I want to try. Green Chef does all the shopping, chopping, and makes the sauces for me so I can easily plan healthier, high-quality dinners for my family. The recipes are quick, easy, and come with step-by-step instructions with pictures, which I love, and it helps if you're cooking with kids or just starting out. Last night, I made Spanish steak with patatas bravas, and the slaw with currants was my favorite part. The variety of cuisines is my husband's favorite thing about Green Chef because he was getting tired of my crockpot surprises and endless pasta bowls for the kids. For example, tonight we're trying spiced shrimp with coconut rice, and that is a flavor we'd normally only eat at a restaurant, so it makes dinner not only delicious, but a cost-efficient way to try out new flavors. For $50 off your first box of Green Chef, go to greenchef.us/realityTV. That brings your first box of 3 meals to less than $30. That's greenchef.us/realityTV for $50 off your first box. greenchef.us/realityTV. Well, what do you know? Guess what Max has been doing since we left last week? He got himself a much-expected order of protection against him from Jessica. Now, I'm talking real-time right now, present day. You're going to have to check out, I think I read it on Starcasm for the details. I'm not 100% read up on it, but I'm pretty sure Max, I'll just say, put his hands on Chloe. So now he can't have any contact with Chloe, Jessica, her husband, the other daughter, or Chloe and Max's daughter. They can only text each other about the baby. So that is happening right now, real time. Go and look at Instagram if you're interested. They're still Instagramming each other. Is that what you call it? Tagging each other? I don't know. Whatever it is the kids are doing these days. But let's talk about this week's episode of Unexpected. Max No Millions leaves the hospital because, remember, he thinks that babies will wait for him to come back. Doesn't matter that he left his girlfriend, who is giving birth to his child, in pain on the bed. It was really good for him. He needed to leave because his anxiety. Just like I theorized last week, the reason Max left was because Chloe was getting more attention than him. He wasn't even shy about it. He says he felt like he was the quarterback, but his hand was hurt, so no one was paying attention to him. No. Little dick wipe. Chloe is the quarterback. She is the quarterback who not only plays in the big game, she makes the run for it. She scores the winning touchdown. Max, you're not even second string. He's like the water boy at best. So it's finally time for Chloe to push, and she is not doing well. God, I felt bad for her. Jessica is being such a good mom. I think all of us who are parents know what it's like in that moment. Your kid is sick. They're throwing up. You don't feel good either. Just everything makes you nauseous, but you automatically turn into Florence Nightingale and you're their strength because they can't be strong. She's cheering Chloe on, telling her that she's doing so good. And then there is frickin' Max. Okay. He is yelling, full out yelling, counting to 10. 1, 2, 3. Shut the fuck up. I would have kicked him, thrown a punch. That would not have gone down on my watch, whether I was giving birth, my kid, anyone I knew, any of you, if you are giving birth and there is someone in your birthing room doing that, call me up, send me a quick message, jody@realtvpodcast.com. I will get there and take that person out. I wanted to just ram a freaking football, because Max loves the football analogy, up his asshole and then start yelling and counting 1, 2, 3, and see if that cheered him on to help him out and, you know, get him through the big contractions. What a fucking asshole. Okay, so that's Max and Chloe for you. Let's talk about another couple that is infuriating, but it's infuriating because I am bored to tears watching it and I feel like I have to watch it because I'm already in this deep. Guess who I'm talking about? Yeah, Lexis and Shaden. Well, what do you think the topic of the week is? Yeah, Lexis isn't sure if she wants to be with Shaden or Shaden's separated at birth twin Lily. The only people on this planet who I have to think hate hearing this more than any of us, probably all of us combined, has got to be that crew that was assigned to Lexis. I mean, can you even imagine, you guys, the hours and hours of footage that was left out that is on the, what do they call it, the cutting room floor, if this is what we are seeing? Seriously, think about it. I do have to point out one thing that I was happy they left in, and that was Shaden coming back from work. He's sitting on Lexis's bed. Remember, they're talking about, guess who, Lily again. I am pretty damn sure Shaden was high on something. I don't know a lot about drugs, but his eyes got all heavy. He got all slurry. He had this weird, kind of despondent, but intense eye contact. Very different from when he walked in the room. So whatever he may or may not have taken before he walked in the room, it definitely kicked in within the 5-10 minutes that they started talking. I am well aware, and I hope you are too, that this is an equal opportunity snark podcast. So I need to let Lexis have it too. She can blame her Lexisness on postpartum. She can blame it on hormones. Or what I recommend, she can just say, hey, I act like a spoiled brat. My behavior is embarrassing and I need to get myself some maybe professional help, or maybe I just need to keep myself in check. She alludes to that sometimes, but then she doesn't follow through on it. She still keeps acting like, I hate this phrase, but a drama queen. I mean, really, she just needs to get herself under control and knock it off. It's not cute. It's not entertaining. This isn't Teen Mom. This is a step up, okay? This is TLC, goddammit. Okay, let's talk about, oh shit, Emily and Diego are next. God, it was a night full of manic highs and lows for me. All right, Emily and Diego are set to go to the prom, but there's that issue with Emily spending a lot of time with Diego's family and hardly any time with her mom. Her mom, Bridget, is just gutted about it. You can just see it in everything about her affect, and I would be too. We don't get to really know the ins and outs of their relationship. They both seem to keep their feelings, well, not so much Bridget now, but Emily at least keeps her feelings very close, very guarded. Everything is under the surface. But even if her mom were really nasty to her, it really still would suck to see your daughter doing all the mom stuff with someone else. But we're going to come back to that in just a second, because Diego and his ego arrived. Da-ego for short. I mean, ego is already in this kid's name. How do we not see this before? E-G-O. How about that for a self-fulfilling name prophecy? Anyway, Diego comes in wearing his coat and bow tie and no shirt, and oh, man alive, his parents just think he is so funny. I mean, back at home, you should have seen him. He was in the front yard, didn't even have his pants on, just underwear, coat, and tie in the front yard, and oh my God, we were in stitches. No. That would be funny if he were, oh, I don't know, 2 or 3. It's not funny or cute or charming or endearing to anyone but his stupid as fuck parents. You know, you love him, but we do not have to. Now, you think I'm done? No, because as Emily is standing there looking beautiful, again, we've talked about the dress, but dress aside, she looks beautiful. She's such a cute girl. She just had a freaking baby. She looks happy, amazing, and this fucking scrawny ass wonk-eyed kid tells Emily she looks a little pudgy. Oh, I'm sorry. Did someone tell you that you were special? 'Cause you're not. I am all aboard the holding Diego's parents responsible train. If anyone else wants to go in on a monthly pass, let's all get on this together. This is such bullshit. And although Diego followed up the, oh, you look pudgy with a, oh, I was just teasing. She knows that. No. I do not buy that at all. Fast forward a little and Emily's mom is at her house, as are mother and father Diego. Not only are they watching Aria overnight for the first time, but now they're standing in the better place to take pictures for their prom. I mean, let's face it, does anyone ever print these fucking pictures out anymore? Everyone's pictures stay in their phone. Who the fuck cares? But again, I don't blame Bridget for feeling pushed aside and hurt. But it does seem that no matter what Emily does, her mom is going to take it as a slight to her, a personal attack. So it's clear that Emily's now just taken the path of doing her own thing and letting her mom feel and do and say whatever she wants, because no matter what she does, it's going to be the wrong thing. I've been on the fence about how I felt about Bridget until she launched into Emily after cheerleading tryouts. Now, Emily asked Diego's parents to drive her to tryouts for this cheer team. If she makes it, she gets a $1,000 scholarship. She didn't want any tension before the big tryout. I get it. So she didn't ask her mom to drive her. Now, outside the gym, we have to picture this. There's two cars. In one car, we have Diego's parents. And then in the car right next to them is Bridget and Emily's aunt. And Bridget's holding the baby, waiting for Emily to come out and say whether she made the team or not. So Emily finally comes out, and guess what? She made the team. She's all excited. Everyone's happy for her, except Bridget. She's sitting there, stone-faced. It didn't even look happy, okay? Everyone else is thrilled, trying to give her hugs, but no, Bridget's sitting there all stink-faced. So Emily leaves with Diego's parents, and now she's got to deal with the aftermath of that decision. For me, it was as soon as Emily said, the day wasn't about pleasing anyone, it was about me, when they're sitting there crying on the couch, I got the picture, the whole schema, if you will. Emily's whole life has likely been all about her mom, pleasing her mom, doing what her mom told her to do, and not just the normal stuff. It's the typical narcissistic mom stuff that I think Emily's had to deal with. I still get why Bridget is upset. I really do. Like I said, I would be too. But God damn it, Bridget, give it a rest. You got to give a little, or at least admit, hey, maybe Emily wouldn't have been able to celebrate afterwards because had she driven home with me, I would have laid into her about driving there with Diego's parents. And then the whole rest of the day would have been screaming about the same shit that they did right there on the couch. So Emily was right. They wouldn't have been able to celebrate the way that she wanted to because Bridget would have been a huge Debbie Downer. Now, where this takes a really dark turn and really sad, really for anyone watching this, is what we're seeing right here is Emily repeating the relationship with her mother by choosing Diego, right? It all makes sense why she chose Diego now. However, I will tell you what, with comments like that resting bitch face comment Diego's mom made about Bridget, mark my words, it is only a matter of time before Diego's mom turns that shit on Emily or whoever her future unfortunate daughter-in-law is, because Diego's mom is not going to be all chummy-chummy with her daughter-in-law. I can feel it in my bones. Now let's talk about Michaela. Michaela is, well, I want to say trying to change Timmy's diaper, but for some reason, she's just sitting there yelling sideline commentary about it to her grandma. How about instead of yelling about shit getting everywhere, quickly move the shitty diaper behind you and then get your kid on the towel? All babies do what I call the sumo death roll onto their stomachs, so you have to be prepared for that. You grab them by the ankle and you slow the turn. Or if you are not strong enough to do that, you can't overpower your child, What about, you know, taking that towel that he's laying it on, just swing it up and over his little ween so he doesn't go pee, which is what all little boys do when their teeny weenies get fresh air. I guess I'm kind of going in on Michaela now because I feel like by now she should be able to handle a diaper blowout without making it everyone else's problem. Now, moving on, I really hope I didn't hear this correctly, that Michaela didn't go visit her grandpa Tim when he went to the hospital. I really, really hope I heard that wrong, because if that's true, that would be extremely disappointing. Well, let's talk about it. It's sad, but I'll just cover the basics. We learned that Tim got third-degree burns on his legs after trying to load, I think he said a lawnmower or, I don't know, a dune buggy or some shit on the back of his truck. And in the midst of his hospitalization for that, they diagnosed him with cirrhosis. Now, seeing Tim's coloring and learning of his liver issues totally broke my heart, brought back a lot of really sad memories for me. Not to go into it, but my grandma had liver cancer, and although cirrhosis isn't cancer, just the complexity of liver functioning and the everyday annoying life shit that you have to deal with going with that, it makes people feel miserable at all times. I feel terribly for Grandpa Tim, but silver lining, I suppose, is that he said he's learned his lesson, he's not picking up a drink anymore, and he sees things much clearer now. With that out of the way, let's take a quick left turn and talk about the wedding that may or may not be happening. For weeks now, all Michaela has talked about is wanting to get married and have this wedding. Per usual, she coyly admits to being stubborn on purpose just to make her grandparents mad. You know, that's what all of us grown-ups actually call attention getting or being spoiled. You gotta knock that shit off. You're a parent now. There's no excuse for it. Well, since Michaela made a huge stink about having her wedding in 4 months, everyone is now in this frenzy of shuffling things around, making plans. But now guess what? She says she's getting cold feet and she's not sure if she's doing the right thing. Not only that, she's now gaslighting the shit out of Kaylin because he's fucked if he says he doesn't want to get married yet. And now he's fucked if he says he does still want to get married. I mean, what the hell, girl? Here is what I think it is. You know, I always have a theory on Kayla's motives. I think, like I talked about last week, Michaela needs that high. She's chasing the high that drama causes. So that's the one thing. I think the second thing is that now that they live together and she sees that marriage and living together, you know, it's not all cutesy movie nights at home and cuddling all day. It's more like the realistic shit, like endless laundry and God, what else, dishes, cleaning. You know, her bubble is burst and she sees now that marriage really is just a piece of paper. So she wants to hold off so she can maintain that high, that euphoria of being engaged and planning and having this next big thing, like I talked about earlier and like I talked about last week. Now, no Laura and Ty Lore this week. Kind of missed Mama and Papa Eeyore, but looks like we'll get to see him next week. Speaking of next week, we find out that Michaela's pregnant again. Tyler enlists. Max gets arrested, and Diego just keeps on being a little prick. After another quick break, let's talk Married at First Sight. Have you realized how addicting Poshmark is yet? It's like Pinterest, but it's stuff you can actually buy and afford because you're shopping other people's closets instead of unattainable outfits that, let's face it, you can never track down. There was this adorable Cat and Jack sweatshirt cape that my daughter loved, gray with colorful pom-poms, and guess what? She found it on Poshmark. That's right, I have her hooked on it too, which is a win-win. She feels like she's shopping for herself, and I don't have to waste hard-earned money on retail prices in the store. All you have to do is download the free app, choose the brands that you love from Cat & Jack to my favorite, Cut From The Cloth Jeans, Gap, BCBG, and men's brands too. And I have to tell you, if you need Halloween costumes, get on over there because there are some incredible deals. There's a super cute Wonder Woman getup that I would like to get my hands on. And kids' costumes. I already think I'm going to sell my kids' old costumes. I have a ton of them. They only wore them once. I can get my money back. So here's what you need to do to save money and look good. Go to Poshmark.com, and if you use referral code REALITV, you get $5 off your first order. And shipping is super easy whether you buy or sell. One more time, go to Poshmark.com and use referral code REALITV. Congratulations. We did it. You did it. We got through this season of Married at First Sight, and I think our reward, our light at the end of the tunnel, was that the tell-all reunion, whatever you want to call it. We can call it whatever you want because we made it through. Samantha Harris was hosting instead of the panel of three experts, right? You know I'm always doing quotes when I say experts. So I was very pleasantly surprised to see Samantha Harris's skinny arms there. Gave me some motivation to stick to my diet, love her arms. But I also got a little curious, you know, what has Samantha been up to these days? Well, get ready for a treat. Not only did she win consecutive years, 2007-2008 Crown Awards for Best Hairstyle on Television, guess who voted on this? The one and only voters at super-hair.net. Mic drop right there. Or maybe hold on to that mic because get ready for this. Did you know that Samantha Harris is royalty? Oh, yeah, yeah. Her parents, oh, by the way, her real last name is Shapiro. Her parents founded the Renaissance Festival on the East Coast known as King Richard's Fair. I am sure most, if not all of you, have heard of this. And if you haven't, you've heard of the Bristol Fair. Yeah, they founded that too. Who would have thought our Samantha Harris with the beautiful long locks, I mean, the recipient of the Crown Awards at super-hair.net, would be the heir to the Renaissance Fair dynasty? Apologies, m'lady. Okay, well, let's just get to it before I hate myself for doing Renaissance Fair jargon. Okay, so Samantha is very smiley. She's doing a great job. Really don't have anything bad to say about her, but I do with Dr. Jessica because, you know, I can't stand her. Jessica's fillers, she needs whatever it takes to dissolve it because she's got this weird wrinkle around her mouth and nose. So even an attempt to smile makes her look like she's smelling Dr. Pepper's farts and maybe like a bad chicken leg or something from the Renaissance Fair. All right, well, let's see what's up with Tristan first. Samantha Harris, I mean, she's beautiful. She does a much better job than any previous reunion that I can remember. But man, she does know how to put the drama on with her questioning. Well, Tristan, there's been highs and there's been lows. Tell me about it. And tell her about it, he does. Turns out the day after decision day, Tristan was just, you know, scrolling through Facebook, and he accidentally watched a video that his ex posted. Now, this does sound suspicious. You know I hate Mia, but the more Tristan tried to make it sound like his finger just slipped, and before he knew it, he's watching his ex. Oh, she was innocently volunteering as a candy striper or some shit. The more fake it sounded. But regardless, Tristan relays his side of the story and said Mia didn't understand why he would do that, so she got all upset, and he just calmly told her, you know, just chill out, you need to be mentally stronger, and then she just chose to put on her purse and leave, and yeah, that's where they're at. This is when the reunion turned into a little Ricky-like. Remember vintage Ricky? Go Ricky, go Ricky. Guests would stand in a soundproof booth right off stage while the second person would come out, give their side of the story. So Tristan leaves, and then Mia comes out of door number two. And oh, the irony, Mia just slipping out door number two while Dr. Pepper and Jessica are just shooting each other looks of disgust about her because, ooh, Mia laughed. Well, Mia sits down, hunches over as usual, And she starts saying that Tristan told her that she just had to be strong or something. And even when she talked to his mom a couple days later, his mom was making excuses for him. And she was just like, oh my God, why is this happening to me? You know, ever the victim. So what does Tristan have to say? Tristan, come on out. Okay, so Tristan comes out. They get to it that, yeah, they're divorced. Surprise to no one. Immediately, they're squabbling, though, over who initiated the divorce first. I mean, does it really freaking matter? Tristan starts twitching, and then you know what happens next. Dr. Jessica pipes in. You know, I think what we're seeing here is hurt people, TM, Dr. Jessica. But I don't see this as a failure. To which Tristan is rolling his eyes and starts making facial gestures, all the same ones that we've all grown accustomed to doing ourselves when Jessica tries to, you know, roll in with her stolen pearls of wisdom and her hashtag Dr. Jessica quotes. I think the only person we can all agree on that stage that we would take any advice from would be from Dr. Pepper, and even her advice about staying dignified during a divorce. I think it sounds nice, but it is probably damn near impossible in reality. But what sent my eyes rolling like Tristan's was Pastor Cal's stump speech. He thinks if he just emphasizes things and squints his eyes like Oprah used to do when she really, really loved a book, you know what I'm talking about? He thinks it automatically means something. No, Pastor Cal, your advice freaking sucks because it's never advice. It's just ramblings, you know, kind of like mine here. But you know what? I'm not a marriage counselor. All right, let's talk about Amber. She comes out and man, they make it out as if she is coming out a whole different person just because of her hair color. I mean, way to just dumb us all down. Now, I do like Amber as a brunette, but I like her even more because she was so open and direct during this hour. She just cuts right to the chase and says that she and Dave are not together. He never got past her dating that friend of his, which I kind of forgot about, but now I really want to know what went on. And he, you know, Dave made a bigger deal out of her previous dating history than Dave let on camera during the season. I think what was especially hurtful to Amber, and it would be to anyone, was that Dave told her he didn't know if he could ever fall in love with her. So at that point, she thought, why am I here? And she moved out. Now exit Amber and then enter Dave. Dave, of course, has a bit of a different story. According to him, he had no idea that Amber was going to move out. He went golfing one day, came home, and then, oh, all her shit is gone. Now, I seriously doubt that there were no clues, no indications at all that Amber was thinking of moving out. The girl does not hide her feelings well at all, and I would theorize, hypothesize that Dave probably just was not being very tuned into Amber, probably exhausted by some of her emotions in general, and he just did not see any of the vibes that she was putting out. What's that, Jillian? Welcome back, Amber, to the set. I can't lie. I was super curious to see if Amber was going to respond negatively and freak out over what Dave said. But you know what? She did really well. She was calm. She was measured. She admitted fault. And I really respect her for that. Now, Pastor Cal's bullshit about couples bringing together their problems and when you have issues with each other, it should bring you closer instead of drawing you away to have time away from each other. Okay, I don't agree with that. Maybe in some cases if it's not big issues, but if there are large issues like, oh, you know, marrying someone you don't know and they dated someone who you were very close to, I don't know about, you know, just fuck it, let's come together and ooh, wasn't that cute? We had an issue and now we're close. It doesn't work that way. So Dave, Amber, are you still married? Well, yes, they are still legally married and they're still working on their issues. But you had problems, you said. Where do we go from here? Well, Amber is like, okay, take it easy, Samantha. I think I want to work on the relationship. I think I learned a lot. My cat is already trained to stop ripping through the teepee. I would like to work on my relationship and stay married to Dave. And Dave, what's your answer?
You know, I think I'm good. I don't think it's going to work.
All right, well, Dr. Jessica saw an opportunity to just throw some more passive-aggressive shade in there. And she says,
well, Dave, Amber, thanks for coming. You handled that with class up until this point.
Up until this point. Meaning they looked like complete assholes on the stage. Okay, thanks, Jess. All right, so Dr. Cal, what about you?
Short answer, yes. I think this can work. But this is your marriage, not my marriage.
Okay, well, thanks, Pastor. He goes, again, he gets paid to give this kind of advice.
Oh, Danielle, look at that dress, so pretty.
Okay, everyone's looking at Danielle. She comes out. Yes, she looks gorgeous. Her eyebrows look incredible. But her hair, it looks pretty. But, I mean, she really loves that front tendril look, doesn't she? Now, Bobby comes out, too. They hold hands in a weird way that only people who sit on the same side of the booth of the table, you know the ones, only people like that hold hands like they do, where they're like side by side, but kind of facing each other. It's just bizarre. So they share all their ooey gooey, over the top dreams of love and unicorns and foster dogs who shit everywhere, but they don't care because they just love cleaning up shit with one another. That's home. Home is where the dogs shit together. So what else is new? They haven't had an argument yet. And this is where I'm throwing a question out to you. Do you believe this? Or do you think this, we've never had an argument, is a lie they tell just so people won't ask? Because remember when they did the same thing about having sex where they told everyone they didn't, but they really did? Because I have to think it's just impossible to never, ever even have a small fight. I would become suspicious that there were hidden cameras that were hidden around my house that were going to be used in my husband's murder alibi if I end up murdered somewhere. You know what I mean? Like, okay, why the hell is he greeting me with a smile every morning and making me breakfast in bed and farting teddy bear hearts all the time? It just doesn't make sense to me. Now, let's bring in all the other couples, and Mia starts fielding questions about her mugshot and arrest. And this is where I sat up, kind of starting to doze off during the Danielle and Bobby shit. And this is where I was like, okay, here we go. This could get good. But no, her answer ended up being so cooked, so prepared, they really breezed over it. And she just said the typical, yes, it's me. I own it. It's me. It was my rock bottom. And I've learned so much about myself. And then we cut to Tristan, who looks like every what the fuck meme and gif, whatever the fuck it's called, that has ever been made. We know they hate each other. We're all so over them this season. I would be happy if I never saw them. And please, dear God, do not have them back on some sort of Married at First Sight, second chances bullshit. Now, I'm talking a good game, but I'm not going to lie. Like many of you, there's about 2% of me that wants to know all of the details, exactly how they went down. I want to know the shit Mia did to make Tristan turn into such a bitter Betty. Samantha then goes to Amber, who's asked to talk about being dumped by Dave just now. And like I said, I would have expected her to be much more devastated. So I'm wondering, did she really have an idea that Dave was going to dump her then? But on the other hand, she did seem genuinely surprised about how certain he was in his answer that he absolutely did not want to stay married to her. Now, if it were not already sucky enough for Amber just with that to have all eyes on her with this breakup, Samantha asks the one and only Dr. Jessica to say something. Of all the people on the stage, she picks the woman who's dating John from last season. Jessica thinks that they should just get some counseling because they can make it work if they just worked with a professional. Turn to camera, wink, little shine on her tooth.
Dave, would you be up for that?
No, not at this point. Okay. Well, I was shocked by his bluntness and
I mean, that's coming from me, so that says a lot. Well, let's talk about Dr. Pepper for just a second. She really has taken a backseat these last two seasons. They've changed the format, or not really the format, the roles of the experts, so we don't hear a whole lot from her throughout the season. But when she piped in that Dave should look into why he was so bothered by Amber dating a friend of his, oh, I loved it. Yeah, Dave, how about you do some introspection, you do some changing instead of it always being about Amber? And you know he wanted to interject something at one point, but Dr. Pepper just kept on talking and shut him down. He did not like feeling attacked there, did he? Back to Samantha, who is keeping this reunion moving at a clip, and this is where Samantha cut him short and asked the group if they would do Married at First Sight again. Now, Mia thinks that her innocence was taken away, so she wouldn't do it again. Okay, let's just leave that there, because where do we even start? Amber wouldn't do it, no way. And Dave, he wouldn't either, because he doesn't like that his friends are giving him a hard time. Okay, dude, lighten the fuck up. Now, Tristan was raising his hand that he would do it again, except he takes back the comment about not wanting to marry a woman who has darker skin than him. And I am not touching that one, because however he felt about it then, however he feels about it now, he's gone through some shit for it, and I think we should just leave it at that. Now, back from the last break, there's a secret to be shared, but it's really not so much a secret anymore because Danielle's pregnant. Holy shit, Amber's reaction. She just about emptied all her eggs out of her ovaries, and I knew she was just seething with jealousy. I didn't think she was going to say she was jealous, though. She actually said it, like, why not me? Okay, Jesus, Amber, settle down, go over and hug her, at least say congratulations. Maybe I missed it, but I didn't even hear her say, hey, congrats, guys. And I think Dave was caught off guard, or maybe he wasn't caught off guard. He's just used to seeing her reactions like that, because he cringed. It was a full-on, eyes closed, pinched face when Amber said that, oh, what about me comment. I mean, she said it in a coy, playful, kind of joking way, but I cringed too. And the look on his face was definitely like, yeah, you see, this is why I can't be with her. I really do hope that Amber finds someone. She's kind of grown on me. Mia, fuck off. Tristan, I don't like a lot of the behavior that I've seen from him. And Dave, I think he just needs to lighten up, or else he's going to be an eternal bachelor. And if that's what he wants to be, then go for it. All right, well, that does it for this week's episode of RealTV. Thanks for tuning in. Remember to subscribe, share, talk to me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at RealTVPod, and head over to my other podcast, Moms on the Rocks. We are having a lot of fun over there. We're going to be doing a lot more episodes, so make sure you check us out, Moms on the Rocks. We are at MomsOTR on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. And don't forget to check out patreon.com/RealTVPod. Have a good week, you guys. Talk to you later. Stay salty.